Welcome to Bridging the Gap. I'm David McDonald. On this show, we're going to be speaking with Jim Hughes, who's the director of the National Office of Campaign Life Coalition in Toronto, and Aidan Reed, director of the Ottawa Office of Campaign Life Coalition. CLC is responsible for lobbying MPs on pro-life, pro-family issues. They also are very active in getting MPs elected who are pro-life. They work tirelessly under very difficult circumstances in a political environment that is hostile to people who are pro-life. I have a great respect for these men and all who work with them in the offices of Campaign Life Coalition. They'll be speaking about the National March for Life, which is coming up this Thursday, May 11th at 12 noon on Parliament Hill, which will have about 6,000 people and a huge 20,000-watt sound system and praise and worship music, and we're going to pray up a storm on Parliament Hill. In the second half hour at 2 o'clock, we're going to be talking with Janet Smith, who is a professor of theology at the Sacred Heart Seminary in Detroit, Michigan, and with Michael Korn, who is a well-known talk show host, and they will be talking about the upcoming Humanae Vitae conference that's happening from May 12th to the 14th. We hope you stay with us for the next hour on Bridging the Gap. Jim, you've been in this field for a long, long time.
Yeah, I've been in it for a long time, David.
You've been in the trenches, and you could have been a politician at one point, and you really made the decision to actually stand up for life instead. Can you talk a little bit about that decision? Like, what happened in you that you wanted to stand up for the unborn rather than to advance your career in politics?
Well, one day God tapped me on the shoulder, so to speak. And at the time, Campaign Life Coalition had just been founded. In fact, it was founded in 1978 in Winnipeg in May. And this was October of the same year. And a parish priest in my church said, there's a meeting of a new organization, a new pro-life organization that will take place in a week or so. I'm inviting you to go and see what it's all about. So I said, well, I don't know anything about this issue, and are you sure there's not someone else that you'd rather send? And he said, no, this is sort of a challenge to you. So I went to the meeting, took a friend of mine along, who was also a business colleague, and when I got there to the meeting, I looked around and I knew a whole raft of these people. I'd known them. So after the first meeting, I was sort of hooked. I thought, well, somebody's got to do something about this. I went to another meeting where they elected me the chairman of Campaign Life Toronto, which consisted of about 200 people in total. And there was a mailing list across the country of about 600 to 800 people, I guess. Today, that mailing list is about 125,000 families across Canada, and I've had the pleasure of doing this work for over 25 years, and it's made me a better Catholic. It's made me a better Christian as a result of the whole battle, the whole struggle. So our job in Campaign Life Coalition is to alert the public as to what's going on, trying to get people to run for political office who will stand up once they get there.
And you've made some tremendous personal sacrifices also, like in terms of, you know, the amount of money you could have made as opposed to what you make today.
Our house is furnished an early Salvation Army. and thank God my wife has always been a very cheerful and supportive wife, because the norm would have been, hey, why are you saddling us with somebody else's leftovers? Why are we getting furniture that other people have grown tired of? And I said, well, because it's still useful, and let's use everything. In fact, when we get faxes sent to our office, the faxes are just flipped over and we use the blank side in order to write messages or write notes to one another, etc. And this goes back to the time I was in, when I was in school as a young school kid. It would be a great day when the nun would come in and say, "I've got all these samples that were given to me, and one side's blank." And so we had a blank piece of paper to write on, and it was terrific. So we don't waste a single thing. We see a paper clip on the floor. In fact, if I see a paper clip on the street, I pick it up. I hurt my back one time, and my kids would needle me and say, "It's because you pick up pennies off the ground." And my mother, I wrote a column about it, and my mother read the column, and she said, "You know, the penny is really an important part of our lives. I'm going to start the St. Joseph's Penny Savers and donate all the money to the pro-life movement." So over the course of the year, she's still doing it. She's 97 this year and recuperating from a broken hip. And so the money continues to be collected from St. Joseph's Penny Savers, and they probably donated to us over $10,000 over the years just by, you know, saving the lowly penny. So it's been a very interesting trip so far. I'm looking forward to seeing it through to the end, as the great Father Richard John Newhouse, who was born in the Ottawa Valley and raised here, and then went off to the States, as he said to us at a conference in Toronto, "It's wonderful to see all the young people here," and all the young people cheered, and the older people cheered for the young people and whatnot. "But you older people, you're in this for the duration. You can't quit. You got to stay in this till God calls you to your eternal reward."
Do you see a parallel between the slavery issue in the 30s and the sort of tireless workers who ran the Underground Railroad? And do you feel that there's a parallel between what we saw in the 30s and the division amongst Christians over the issue and that kind of thing? Do you see a parallel between that and the pro-life movement?
What I see is that what's happening now is not something new. It's something that it's history repeating itself. We had the situation with black human beings who were considered only to be two-fifths or three-fifths human because of the pigment in their skin. We saw before that as well, and after that in some countries, that women weren't full citizens as well. They weren't given the vote. We saw, too, in some countries where only the wealthy got to vote. The merchants and others were not considered worthy of being allowed to vote for their representatives. We saw during the Second World War, the Jews were not considered to be full first-class citizens. So we went through those periods of time when you look back and say, well, how could this have possibly happened? And yet here we are calling human beings that live in the womb non-persons. I remember when I started in this work, the people that were promoting abortion would say that it's merely a blob of tissue or a collection of cells. Now, if you tried to pull that off in a classroom, the kids would laugh you silly because they know all about DNA, and they know right from the time of fertilization, this is a unique human being that's unlike every other human being. So what do you mean it's a blob of tissue or collection of cells? It's a real human being. And then with 4D ultrasound showing a child in the womb, I mean, it's absolutely phenomenal that people can see their children before they're born. So it's very difficult for the people that push abortion to claim that it's non-human.
So one of the big things that Campaign Life Coalition is doing is organizing the march on Parliament Hill. Aidan, you've been involved in that march for a number of years now. It's our sixth year, is that right?
This will be the ninth year of the March for Life.
So it's getting bigger every year, right?
Absolutely, and next year's number 10, so it'll be a great year.
And we're seeing a lot more young people showing up at the march too, aren't we?
Absolutely. I believe it's about half of the people who show up, if not more, are young people coming from various parts of Ontario and various parts of Canada. And we're very encouraged by that, of course.
And you've recently just stepped into the role of director of the Ottawa Office for Campaign Life Coalition. Does that seem like a daunting task?
Well, absolutely. Considering the task, as you say, it's considered by most people to be a dead issue. And a lot of politicians, when they get up to the Hill, they hear that from their party leaders, and they hear how this is something that you shouldn't bring up because it's too controversial. And it's essentially our job to contradict that, to let them know that, no, we're not going to let it die, and that it is will remain an issue until we have a law in Canada and until the unborn have the respect they deserve.
Jim, what did the march look like 9 years ago?
There were less than 1,000 people there. It was the anniversary of the decision by Parliament back in May of 1969, I think it was. And so this was commemorating that that anniversary. And so we put it together pretty quickly, and we invited the politicians to join us, and I think three or four politicians came out that year. And we marched through the streets of Ottawa, trying to educate the people of the nation's capital just what this was all about. Then it grew from there. And we tried to get across that abortion was going to be the human rights issue for the 21st century. And gradually it started to catch on. And I know that a colleague of mine was at a conference in Hamilton last week. And there a young person stood up and encouraged the audience to come to their March for Life in Ottawa. Well, it's the same march. So you see, once people began to see that this was their march, that's when it started to take hold. Now we're hoping and praying that the clergy will see that it's their march too. Talking with Nellie Gray, the founder of the March for Life in the United States, which draws over 100,000 people each year to Washington, D.C. in January of the year, commemorating the Roe v. Wade decision by their Supreme Court, she told me that it took about 10 years until the clergy saw that their role was so important, it was so vital to the issue, to the effect of the march, that they finally took it on. That this was their march too. And so anybody that's been to the march will tell you about the clergy from various religious communities and faith communities, etc., that turn out. And the Catholics have a mass the night before the march. And this year, the procession of the cardinals, archbishops, bishops, and priests took 20 minutes. So there were so many of them coming into the church. I think there were over 600 of them that participated, plus a packed church of probably 12,000 people as well. Mm. And so we're hoping that that will take place here in Canada as well. We're spread out a lot farther than they are in the U.S. In the U.S. Eastern Seaboard, for instance, there's a huge concentration of people, perhaps 100 million people. Here in Ottawa, we have to draw on folks from Montreal and Toronto and every place in between. And it's a little more difficult getting the people here, but it's very worthwhile. The number of politicians went up from three or four the first year to about 25 now that participate, and many more that are on house duty or whatever, or are traveling on committees and just can't be there. But there are lots of politicians that are very hardworking individuals. They are people of principle that the younger people in the country can look up to, and it augurs well for the future, David.
Aidan, you're a young guy. You're a young guy.
And Jim, you're an old guy. Is that what you're about to say?
Everything's relative, I guess.
Well, no, Jim, you're wise. For those of you out in radio land, Jim looks like Captain Highliner.
Well, they've even got the cap today to prove it.
Aidan, you're a young guy. Why aren't you out there like with on the left wing with all the sort of youth that's, you know, sort of going that direction? What happened that you decided that you want to really stand up for life? Like, that's an incredible thing to see a young guy doing like that. And now you're running this office, and you met President Bush a year and a half ago, years ago.
Yep.
And you were able to, you know, meet many politicians. Like, you're just like climbing this ladder that it seems like Jacob's ladder God's given this thing to, you know.
Well, I don't know about that. I think that it's, you know, when you talk about left wing or right wing, I'm not sure if those labels are appropriate anymore, because things have changed a lot since, you know, the 1960s when the civil rights movement was around. I think that we call pro-lifers right-wing simply because that's where they tend to be politically, but that's not necessarily always the case. For myself, I think I was raised in an environment where I was taught to fight for things that I believe in and fight for people who can't fight for themselves. I'm originally from South Africa, and my parents, taught us that the situation there was unjust and voted with their feet in when they saw that they couldn't do enough there. They voted with their feet and moved to Canada and in that way repudiated the regime there. And ever, throughout our lives have always taught us to stand up for what we believe in and go against the crowd if necessary. And I think being, in my generation, we're the generation that's grown up in the culture of death, and we don't know any different. And so it's hard for us in some ways to visualize what it's like in a culture of life, but in that way we bring a unique perspective. We have fresh ideas, and we're able to in learning how to fight, we're able to do it in a unique way.
Are you seeing movement on the part of the politicians? Are you feeling like you're making an impact on them? Is there some soft hearts there?
Absolutely. There's the people who've been there all the time. There's the people who have been there 20 years, and they've been fighting for this. And, I really take my hat off to them, because that's got to be the hardest job going, especially if you're fighting against a party that opposes you and ridicules you all the time. But particularly in the younger MPs, I see a lot of hope. And, we get very active during elections, and we help MPs to get elected. We sort of egg them on to run in the first place. And it's really great to see the numbers are growing of people who will stand up and say they're pro-life. So it is nice to see, gradually, little by little, we are chipping away at, the hardness of hearts of people, and we're making a difference.
And this year on the March for Life, we're expecting, 6,000, 7,000? The number of young people has doubled this year. They have a conference the following day, and it's gone from 400 to 900 just at that one conference. There is some exciting stuff happening. Where do you see the march going in the next number of years? Do you see it continuing to grow? You see that we're still getting, that there's this sort of ramping up, and that the Lord is doing a mighty work across this country?
Oh, absolutely. Well, as far as I'm aware, every year it's grown a little bit more, and especially last year. And so we expect next year, being the 10-year anniversary, we expect much larger numbers. And as Jim was saying, the march in the States, it took a long time to get going, to get the really big numbers. And we fully expect, once we get a lot of the bishops on board, a lot of the pastors, and when the word gets out, it'll just be a flood. I absolutely expect that.
So tell us some details about the March for Life. What will people expect to see? When should they be there? All that kind of stuff.
The march kicks off. There's different religious ceremonies that accompany it. And we have a mass at St. Teresa's Parish in Ottawa.
And that's at 7 p.m. this Wednesday.
And right after that, everyone is welcome to join us for the Candlelight Vigil, which is at the Tribute to Human Rights Memorial on Elgin. And that's the day before the march. During the day of the march, there's a mass right together. There's a mass, and then there's a Protestant prayer service at the same time at 11 o'clock.
That's this Thursday.
And the mass is at St. Patrick's Church. And right at 12, we gather at the hill. Right after the carry-on is finished, the music will start, and there'll be speeches, and the MC will obviously guide that. The politicians will be there. And that right after that, we'll kick off the march, and I'll march through downtown. Later that evening, we'll have the gala banquet, which will be at the Congress Center.
And this all happens Wednesday, May the 10th is Wednesday, and that's the night of the vigil, and the 11th is the march itself, right? Jim, where do we go from here?
Well, when you come out the gates, you turn left. Actually, as we are the instruments that the good Lord uses to touch the minds and hearts of our fellow Canadians, more and more people will see that there's something wrong with this abortion issue. There's something wrong with this euthanasia that's now being discussed, etc. And let's get involved. Let's do something about it. There are people that will bubble up to the surface who will want to run for public office, and it's our job to seek those people out, to help train them, and to get them elected to office, whether it's at the school board level, at the city council level, to the provincial legislatures, and then to the House of Commons. It's our responsibility as citizens of this great country to get actively involved. And I see a time somewhere in the future, I don't know when the thought of killing an innocent human being in the womb will be so repugnant as making a black person walk to the back of the bus.
Yes. Well, we pray for that day, and we pray that all of you who are listening to the show would really come to this issue and take a good look at it in the light of your relationship with Christ. And we always have to ask, what would Jesus do? I mean, that's the big question of the day. What would Jesus do in this case? We just pray that the Canadians will change their hearts on this and will really move towards a pro-life, a pro-God country. Jim?
Well, you know, back in the 60s, I can remember as a young man, the left-wing radicals had bumper stickers that said, "Jesus is alive and hiding in Argentina." But you know what? Jesus is just as alive now as ever, and he's working in the hearts and the minds of a whole load of people. And that's why the people that oppose us, we encourage our supporters to pray for all of them, that they'll see that they're on the wrong side on these issues, and that they'll let the good Lord work in their hearts. And I pray for Henry Morgenthaler and the other abortionists across the country, that they will see the light before they die and are called before their maker to give an accounting of what they've done or not done in their lives. So I pray for all of them every day, hoping and praying that God will touch their hearts. And I think that if all of us are properly disposed to all of this, and we see that this was, especially us, the Christians, they can remember that this was won on Calvary 2,000 years ago. That all of this, has been ordained by God for all of us, even though we're not worthy, and that he just asks us to do our bit.
Mm. Well, Jim Hughes from Campaign Life Coalition Toronto, head office. Aidan Reed from Campaign Life Coalition Ottawa. We're just so grateful to have you guys out there fighting for the unborn. And we pray that your work and your ministry will continue to grow and that we will continue to influence people in our country and our politicians. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing with us this afternoon on Bridging the Gap.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Let's listen to the theme song for this year's National March for Life that we'll be singing on Parliament Hill Thursday, starting at noon. That's this Thursday, May the 11th. We hope to see you there.
Hey, Lord, help me understand where we're taking this promised land. So much talk about human rights. What's more basic than the right to life? A wave of death from sea to sea, but we're denying the reality. We'll be facing our darkest fears as our leaders turn a deaf and ear. Our country is disappearing. Abortion is killing the hope of the future. We can't go on pretending. We don't know where it's ending. We've got to stop this distortion. What this country is believing, the message we're receiving, what we're sowing and reaping, 'cause in God's eyes, every life is precious. Young people, take a look around. Half your generation's in the ground. How many could have been your friends? They were brought to a tragic end. And you stand up and lend your voice to the victims who got no choice. Let this nation hear the silent screams of innocent blood and long lost dreams. This is anything but freedom. Abortion is killing the hope of a future. We can't go on pretending. We don't know where it's ending. We've got to stop this distortion of what this country's believing. Message we're receiving, what we're sowing and reaping. 'Cause in God's eyes, don't you wonder what they could have changed? Could have found a cure, but they died unnamed. Little martyrs crowned with thorns. More have died than in all our wars. What this country's believing, the message we're receiving, what we're sowing and reaping. 'Cause in God's eyes, every life is precious. Every life is precious.
If you'd like to get in contact with us here at Bridging the Gap, you can find us online at www.catholicbridge.com. That's www.catholicbridge.com. We'd love to hear from you. And until then, I'm David McDonald, and we hope you have a beautiful week. May God bless you and your family. Your
love. By far the worst mistake I've ever made in my life was abortion. I pray for anyone who's thinking about it. I knew I had to call this CD Life is the Only Choice, because I chose life when I chose Jesus. I chose life when I decided to stand up and talk to other men about my experience with abortion. And I chose life when I began to share the spiritual healing I've received from Jesus Christ.
Life is the Only Choice, available at Salem Storehouse. David's full testimony is online at www.davidmacd.com. That's www.davidmacd.com.